Following is an interview with Admiral Elmo Zumwalt.
Personal involvement in this dimension of the conflict, the airlift. How were you involved?
One had the problem of operating within a vacuum of legal in a situation in which someone had seized power but didn't have a statutory responsibility. Mm-hmm.
What were the implications for policy making?
The frightening things were that in the absence of a king, there were a series of somewhat autonomous groups. And therefore, there's nothing that had a parallel in the entire military history.
You think if the king was around, there could be a functioning, would there be different kind of positions in the group or the group?
Yes, there's no question. I don't think it's what it is in this situation. It's not the king that will have offer under immediate area to see them rather than the actual situation, which was Kissinger decided to easily agree with the free of what he called the reality and negotiating.
What makes you think that the president ordered it earlier?
Because Mr. Nixon, unlike Kissinger, basically believed in I don't think the question of picking it up, not personally hoping for a small misery, but rather that he didn't believe in the future, even in the country, he thought that he would be able to kill, or just voted for the end of the future, he would be connected with the part of the world.
So the implication of the thing that the president did order was earlier, I guess. What were your contacts with him and with the Dr. Mr. Schlesinger on the airway?
Almost nobody had contacted Mr. Nixon at that time because he had ceased to function. Kissinger was the de facto president, my contacts with him were through Dr. Schlesinger on the one hand and the chairman of the institute on the other.
What did you, one of your first initiate contacts or initiate contacts with you with your Dr. Kissinger or Mr. Kissinger? Or even frequent contacts with them? So what did you, how often were you in contact with Mr. Kissinger? How often was it? I mean, personally?
Well, the period of my tenure was probably 12 times one-on-one. That would be 30 times in a group. During that period, before war, there was almost no direct contact because by that time I was full in opposition to his policy. So the contact I had was
with the better war
and more into the Kissinger.
And what kind of messages did you send to him about the airlift?
My message was to him that he had a free flushing room for an airlift, and the Congress couldn't get through, and the Congress couldn't see any results. Initiated the political steps that turned the situation around.
Yeah, I spoke to his sister before you mentioned. When was that you initiated contacts with Samuel Jackson? And this is when I began to make to prepare a major speech. Critical speech. Support for
the result of
How often would you be in contact with the special messenger? Mostly through telephone calls or person to person or
telephone calls.
And what you, or what was his perception of the airlift?
Recommended
moving by what means?
How?
With American aircraft, American carriers?
When
was the decision to carry things through Israeli aircraft? And I'll
right. Only after taking the original petition for that Israel
was it deliberate confirmation at the time or it is post facto analysis? What did we tell at the time? We have to create a new reality? Already in the first week of the war?
Right.
For what purpose?
Because we were doing transport.
Yeah.
We suffered casualties and lost territory.
But this was in the first or second day of the war, Israel was expected to win more decisively. So when did they begin to elaborate or develop this perception or this guideline?
Didn't have that important experience. They couldn't commit their equipment until they were sure that they had something from their weapon. And he had pretty active insight from the military to what the logistics of that world was.
And how about the. You mentioned in your book, I think this page 434. Was the president, it was the order of the president himself to speak for time. Was it the president? I think it was a Tuesday decision or sometime around the middle of the week. You are quoting Admiral Monroe, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think it was the president. So Kissinger was the author of the decision and the president just endorsed it?
No, he didn't. Before he got hit from all the rest of the world.
So, when was this decision made on Tuesday? What was the decision to stop the time to give Israel a placement, one for one or what? There was some key decision during the first campaign, the first week, middle of the first week.
We were told some things that were alleged to be the decision.
What were you told?
I have to look at the record, but we were told that the White House had given directions for equipment to start moving, but at the same time it wasn't moving.
Yeah.
And I reported in the book to the president, my hands were tied up and told not to move. So it was a window that seemed given to the Israeli ambassador. And they had to back that up. An overt order that told that the signal was going to do it.
And this was Kissinger's order.
Have you ever been in a situation that deep trouble
right.
In a personal or emotional way that you couldn't
function?
That's the situation that they were in.
Uh-huh.
You're just totally incapable of responding
Yeah, I think we were also the week that Agnew resigned.
Yeah.
That's September 10th.
For him, at that point, with everything he did last time for Israel, it was an important detail. Because it was essentially a selfish man.
Right. But we did meet some senators on Wednesday, October 10th, leadership, I think from both the Senate and the House. Yeah.
Anything we did like that, we knew that the senator would make an effort for it. I don't think we focused on any reason until there was actually pressure putting the Israelites together. So it's pretty tough to get on there and have to take the charge and
Was Senator Jackson calling him personally or calling So he was stirring troubles for the president if he wouldn't move more forward, more decisively. So you wouldn't know when was the exact date of the decision? On Tuesday, October 9th or You know, the young I am quoting from page 511 of his book. Apparently, Dayan, Moshe Dayan, who was the first minister of the time, he said that the president or whoever decided not only one for one replacement, but also some additional plans and current equipment. Apparently, what Kissinger or someone else decided was not only just for one replacement, but also more than that. Apparently, Israel was told on Wednesday, October 10th, which means the decision might have been made on Tuesday, October 9th. October
6th.
In other words, it was just a promise, nothing moving? And what do you think, what was the thing that got things moving? What were, you mentioned the Senator Jackson's pressure, this was a key consideration. Was it also in response to other developments?
No. How can you support me like the health of the commission? But he's been a political pressure since the time of the election.
Right.
Luckily, he's given him the views of all of us, but we're not in trouble.
Your son?
What country is going to work? Finally, it all worked.
And what precisely was the decision made Friday night, late Friday night, and the Saturday morning, or when? I think that was
13.
And there was apparently some sort of development. They were trying to have ceasefire in place. Initially, the administration position was ceasefire would return to the pre-war lines, in other words, October 5th line. And then, sometime around the middle of the first week of the war, there was a very significant change when the position was we should have ceasefire in place. Do you know anything about this changed position? The position of the administration on the nature of the ceasefire is going to be the return. The pre-war lines, or to have ceasefire in place?
No. No, the sequence is followed. First, we decided to proceed at a certain place. Then when the Israeli closed the mission, initially the government's position was we were supposed to. Then we received the ultimatum from the government.
No, I'm talking about the first week of the war.
Oh.
First week. Any change on this position, on the ceasefire position? Do you know if this was in any way linked perhaps to the stalling for time or the delay in the airlift? In other words, the administration of Kissinger was trying to see if anything could be worked out in terms of getting first his Hispanic test, and then we would start an airlift, a major airlift.
Once Kissinger became a communist, he was a good leader. And so, he was a man, he was a help to cover nothing. Because people were in those districts, I mean, a lot of territory, a lot of territory, and a fine figure. Yeah. And so he moved quickly to different movements.
But do you think this was already, he became convinced that Israel is going to more than bleed already in the first week of the war, or towards the end of the first week of the war? It was then that he followed the president's view. You also mentioned that Saudi Arabia threatened to cut off oil supplies to US versus Germany.
Yeah.
Did they actually threaten or
just
And how they got from other sources, from other suppliers, other refineries?
Well, there was so much. System was very difficult to know where it came from and what kind of stuff was keeping it so good. There was no real problem with the policy decision and the thing that was doing it again.
Right. And how did the administration react to this threat or this actual cutting off?
Mr. Clinton reported that he had been training with the company. Whether he did or not is something that somebody else would have to do about.
Have you tried to follow up on that?
No. And
what do you think, what was the role of oil consideration in general? Were they effective? Were they oil embargo possibly? Oil consideration.
Did
Kissinger...
It was effective, it was a threat. And we all were worried about what would happen to the land that we were going to join. But the engine was that last one on the roof.
Yeah, well, were this threat or a factor already in the first week of the war or only after the embargo actually started? The embargo started October 17th.
And if we didn't worry about it, it was a lot of factors. We knew the Russians were urging the My recollection is that the convention was in the area that the area was not actually initiated.
So it wasn't the key factor when the airlift decision was made. In other words, Trump could delay or not delay. Oil pressure, oil considerations weren't a major consideration at that time. That's a nice indication. You mentioned a little bit the Soviet in the Watergate. Do you think they exploited the domestic troubles of the president? They did. How did they?
The whole war. So like Vietnam and Cambodia, they came in all of the system. They were proven to make it in the fourth crisis.
Right.
Contingent on their knowledge of the subsequent actions in Angola. As a result, that's the thing that the board had to get for the country to do.
Yeah. But then, you quote in your book, I think Admiral Morrow, that somebody was checking, somebody in the administration was trying to find out if the Soviets were irresponsibly exploiting domestic troubles. And the conclusions of either the NSC or somebody else were that they are not. Do you recall this section? Who was exactly checking?
It would have been an intelligence inquiry.
Was it CIA, BAA, or some political officers?
I guess it would be CIA. But again, that was kind of what took me to the inquiry.
So he wanted, he influenced the finding in a way.
Okay.
He wanted them to find it, not explore the situation.
Okay.
In a positive way.
Oh, sorry. Christians are prostituting themselves.
When was it the hearing out was published?
It hasn't been published legally, at least.
Uh-huh.
The sheriff, the public.
Uh-huh. When was it, in the fall of 75?
Uh-huh. Maybe it was.
So in other words, Kissinger wanted the finding to be that the Soviets are not in a fighting situation responsibly, and this was what the CIA found. Let's see. And to what extent the Soviets actually misled the United States on the pending war? Did they have knowledge?
They had food.
They approved.
Before the summit
When did they exactly alert? What was that? What was the motive in alerting? Is it possibly moving? What extent they believed that the Arabs really would be better this time than before? Did they have some confidence that the Arabs would do better?
They have been successful in keeping how to keep the students supplied. They clearly Israel and us, they were half right. They trained how to half supplied. They hadn't trained how to fight.
Mm-hmm. So they were confident that they would be able to do something Did they, you know, Bill Quandt? He was on the staff of the National Security Council. He wrote a piece for Ryan, and in this piece it said that the Soviet official reminded Nixon or administration that they did forewarn the American government that something is coming. The question was vague or clear enough, but he suggested that the Soviets did indicate in a not very explicit way, but there was some sort of indicating or signaling to the States that something is coming. Therefore, they delivered the misleading?
Of course. They signed some communique after they approved the attack.
What was the role of the Fund in all this thing? In the American consideration and the Soviet? The Soviet suggests they just ignored it and they step on it.
The Soviets need to kind of work with their family. The Soviet wanted to be the combination of the West to then their period of their political capability. We prostituted the concept of the family dependency of the 14th and the Arab concept.
How about the airlift that they started? When did they start actually the airlift? When did they start? The Soviets. The question is when exactly and how big was it? Because Kissinger was trying to minimize its significance and its volume.
The purpose is clear.
Right. So this was already a large quantity before the administration started. And why did Turkey allow them to fly over their territory, over their airspace? Well, they were a NATO member. I hope they allow an enemy in a way. They didn't allow the states to cross.
Was it a clear Russian country? Yes. By the kingdom and so on?
Yeah, but Portugal, would they ever allow them to allow you on the... Why? Why do they check?
Because they also understand the English.
What the service could do to them? They need to depend on the Arab world, they have their umbrella.
When we have countries that earn the right to be accountable, like Russia, and then we have countries that have known them to be totally incapable of reacting to all the president of the rest of them,
right?
What would you do if you were accountable?
So what kind of tactics did people have to apply to them, what kind of pressures? What do you threaten them or how would you advise them?
It's got them not to support them, conventional legislation. Not to help them with regard to their colonies and so forth.
What was pending on the hill? What kind of legislation was pending?
That would have to be increased. They want to close all the countries.
And eventually he got away, got his way.
Yes.
Is it correct that the Erlich started leaving before he got the permission, the final okay?
Well, he was the final president of that country.
No, I mean, he ordered the aircraft to fly to Portugal even before the Portuguese actually okayed it.
I can't help you.
Okay, so this now.
Time to go.
Yeah.
This is my son.
Yeah.
I'm Jevon here from Columbia University.
Hi,
I'm in this one.
I have one more question, Admiral. Who answers now to the one day early?
I guess it's wrong.
Yeah,
Jackson. And Moore.
Yeah. Where is the email?
Even with me.
Yeah.
Thanks, last minute.
Right. Who is this expression here?
But I think I might still have some gaps, so I really should drive your office number. Okay? Sure. Truly a full day. Then the door opened. He gave his name and blithering access to the butler.
That's coming, Linda. You can't change body habits. Just one person can move in one way and another in another. But it's beginning to come. You have a little tendency of wanting to crouch over. And so you have to bring it up. And that's the problem with the microphone, that you have to be up. Of course, when the mic is on strapped to your neck, then there's no problem. But you were kind of in between. So that you give the listener the best advantage always of hearing by facing, having the mouth in the direction of the ear. And when it's down, or you turn your back, or you're too aboard or something, then you know that all that sound is going there. So it's always keeping the body, the mouth, in the direction of the listener. And that gives the listener the better advantage. And it also helps giving that feeling of being able to open the body. Now, the habit of just using more force in everyday talk, I think, is part of it. So that you can feel that you've been talking very almost to yourself, much too privately. And that there's more sound. And that so that begins, you don't have to make such a large adjustment between what would be used in class here and what you would use socially. And you can experiment where you drop below the auditory level of someone to whom you're speaking privately. You feel that this is very low. What happens, you see, if a person is speaking too quietly? I have a close friend. She drives a convertible with convertible top, and that flops. And she's talking on and on and on, telling some anecdote. I just give up. You know, I strain to a certain length, and then I simply cannot hear. But the confusion of the car and this very quiet sound that's going on, and I'm supposed to react to the story, so I just think that I rush my place. Because I'll say, what? I didn't hear, and to a point. And so she's an administrative post. I said, do they hear you? She said, well, I just yell all the time. That's all I do. But the voice is gaining strength, because the voice actually didn't have the strength. She'd been a nurse before and used to speak very, very quietly, kind of withdrawn. And it takes time to get that strength open.
We are a generation that lives in the memory and in the shadow of the 6 million. The destruction of one-third of our people, the Holocaust that occurred such a brief while ago, is a great trauma for us.
Now, what did you hear the first time? Well, what created the mumble? It sounds as a mumble, but you weren't actually intentionally mumbling.
Oh, my mouth wasn't very loose.
You're pulling it all back, you see, quality, the kind of back in the throat, culture, the placement gets back there, like himself, and that, but the tongue for the L is probably the middle of the roof of the mouth, so it sounds back, and then it sounds, and words will slur, because there'll be pullback, and so whatever the word is that follows that. Now, as you're beginning to get that forward, better tone as a result, but a different kind of time. Won't let you pass. You see, won't let you pass. Say that.
Won't let you pass.
It's right there. What's he? Won't let you pass. Won't let you pass. Sometimes just a simple phrase such as that gives you the sensation of where the language is. Won't let you. What time did you come? What time? So it's that forward. Then that brings it up. Now you say suddenly. The D and the N go together. Suddenly. So it's not suddenly. 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 Garden. The D and the N go together. You kitten, the T and the N go together, so you're not being guarded, kitten. But that's placement. And you still need to get more mouth resonance that will give more quality. You see, that you have much more voice in what you're using, because you are kind of just speaking right on kind of the top of the voice here. Now, as the breath comes in, beats in, which it seems to me it's beginning to do, then you're going to get much more sound that begins to come out. And what Mr. Williams is talking about.
Many people are trying to determine how much they should weigh by reading it with tables. But since these tables often indicate average weight rather than optimum weight, the figures tend to be too high. There is
you work with the ending sounds more, but there's still a problem.
My name is Joe Gower. My father wore a Boston tavern hat, brought my fare in a box, and sat down 3 seats from the door. It was late, the bus was crowded.
It's coming, Joe. You see, you get here.
And then the link.
My name is Joe Benvenuto, and I'm trying to read something. wish to know all about my grandfather. Well, he is nearly 93 years old. He dresses himself in an ancient black frock coat, usually minus several buttons. Yet, he still thinks as swiftly as ever. A long, long beard clings to his chin, giving those who observe him a pronounced feeling of the utmost respect. When he speaks, his voice is just a bit cracked and quivers a trifle. Twice each day he plays skillfully and with zest upon our small organ. Except in the winter, when the ooze or snow or ice prevents, he slowly takes a short walk in the open air each day. We have often urged him to walk more and smoke less, but he always answers, banana oil. Grandfather likes to be modern in his language.
It didn't sound comfortable playing, Alice felt, and for a few minutes she walked on in silence, puzzling over the idea, and every now and then stopping to help the poor mite, who certainly wasn't a good rider. Whenever the horse stopped, which he did very often, he fell off in front. Whenever it went on again, which he generally did rather suddenly, he fell off behind. Otherwise, he kept on pretty well, except that he had the habit of now and then falling off sideways. And as he generally did this on the side on which Alice was walking, she soon found that it was the best plan not to walk quite close to the horse.
All right, now that's coming. You see, that you have the sounds, actually, the first recording, you have the sounds, but to get the performance of them in the melody under control E, and that's beginning to come. You learn something from each other, do you not? If you listen to something else, someone else, you can hear what are the requirements, what do you want, you see, in order to be able to accept the idea, or to respond to the idea. And it's just that efficiency of sound, that there's that fluency of the flow of the idea unit, the thought melody, enough accent time on the word, and that's all we ask. We're not working in to have interpretive tones and moves that begin to move in terms of acting and interpretation of such. Just the basic intelligibility of the language and the melody within a time that we can follow and with the sound energy sufficient so that we can hear it. And then the rest follows from that. We're going to have a recording of next week. You can have... fine, thank you. You may bring some extra time. And others will work it here. In performance, if you're communicating an idea, your first responsibility is to put the audience at ease. So we feel comfortable. So you come sit down and say, well, you know, what's it all about? So is it worth my time to listen? And so you do that by establishing your own ease. You feel comfortable. If you come with shoulders hunched, tense, nervous, quivery voices, then we're going to feel uncertain about the whole thing. So you establish your own physical ease, what we've been talking about here. You're on your feet, your shoulders release, you let out this top breath, and you can look at us. You know, simple eye contact, and you know the first thing you're going to say. That opening comment. You don't have to be funny, you don't have to be a clown, you don't have to be a wit. Just that opening statement of your purpose and what you're going to do, what you're going to talk about. But you know that first statement that you're going to say. Then your other problem is to hold the momentum. You can start out very well, but there'll be a tendency to begin to fade, just as if you were backing out of the room. The voice energy begins to die away. And that will happen to anyone. Or if you've been talking on about something or reading, then arbitrarily there has to be a sort of a stepping forward of energy, or else the thing will begin to drift away into a monotone. Now, when you have reading and speaking, there's a certain guarantee, simply because you're doing two different things. There's a tendency for a different energy level to come into that. Now, if you're talking and then reading, know that we make an adjustment to your speaking style. And when you're going to read someone else's mental rhythms. And you have to be stronger when you pick up that reading material. That you don't read and speak at the same intensity level. There has to be a contrast. When we speak, we automatically carry a certain kind of dynamic that's appropriate within our own personality, habit patterns. All right, now the other thing is the accenting on the key points. What is the idea? What are key points here? And those words, you put a red pencil mark over them. They have to have more force, more time, so that we have a chance to hear them. The spontaneity, the language is a byproduct. Perhaps it's important intelligence, the beginning course, because you're very conscious of the kind of performance. Now, you practice this. The reading you can practice because the text remains the same. But the extemporaneous material shifts. You don't memorize it. And so that it's usually easier to talk than read anyway. And you have less difficulty in pronunciation because you're using a vocabulary that's more comfortable and that follows your thought patterns. But that can be rehearsed only to a certain degree. If you rehearse it too much, it becomes memorized. And I don't want it memorized. I'd rather have you stumble, forget some passages, but you're trying to speak from notes, and you're not memorizing sentence by sentence by sentence. Because when you do that, then there's a tendency for the thought and dynamic to go out of the voice, and you're trying to remember what's the next line. There are places where you memorize, but generally that's not the more satisfying. Stage, that's all memorized, right? But being spontaneous on the air is either read, it's usually read, not memorized.
Will this have to be something that we'll be able to answer questions about?
Your final examination, not necessarily your reports, yes, you can answer questions, but your final examination, no.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's time for that. So you can't say something if you don't want to hold yourself responsible for
that.
The question
is
not very good. All right. But what I will observe a grade you upon for it is your ability to establish ease in your presence, that you can feel comfortable. You're talking to a group of people here, just as you would talk to friends, and if you don't feel stiff, uncomfortable. Now, there's always going to be a palpitation to a degree, right? Because there's more adrenaline going through the system. And if you aren't as comfortable as you are in a living room situation or a class situation. But that you want. You want a heightened sense of excitement. You want a little more adrenaline. A little more sense of purpose moving through. And its ability to handle the control of the body through that. All right, yes.
I wanted to ask about the final examination. We prepare the same material and we read here and there out of different, like some quotation, or it's quite different what we have.
I don't care how you organize it. You can read, speak, read, or you can separate. The organization is all yours, how you want to handle it. It can be about one subject or it can be two different subjects. If it's two different subjects, you have two subjects to introduce. So you just don't read something without introducing it to us. We have to know what it is, where it comes from. So the reading may support the talk may support the reading, or they can be two separate organizational structures. But you have something you want to share with us, something you want to communicate. Right? What is communication? That you want to make some kind of impression upon our thinking process. That here's something you want us to think about. And since we're an academic audience, our interests are very wide. All inclusive. You have no problem whatsoever. All right, very well. The report. Who is giving the report?
My job. He is a well-known linguist. I want to introduce him. He's better known for his theory on the transformation graph. Now, the material of this article is to show that this transformation grammar could be applied then in philosophy and psychology, in thinking how the mind works and language as a part of how the mind works.
Environment is more important or genetic?
According to Chomsky, environment is only, no, gives you only the ability to train inner modification which already exists. A habit, a sharpening process which can enable the richness of the vocabulary that the mental process that you never acquire unless anybody knows.
But environmental forces can be so strong in the conditioning of our responses to language codes, behavior codes, that it's literally impossible for the mind to be free of the old environmental
story. I didn't say too much, but I want to add something because I think it's interesting. What he stresses out by this theory is that the generative, ability to generate innovative way of the mind is usually the right one. And this is an example of the computer. Computers are limited reports, but they are able to select and to choose among the information they got, but they never perceive, they are not able to generate new sentences, which they combine just in generality or analogy. If the mind is generally a powerful creature, of course, if I don't give the right information, I'm learning, it's useless to expect any response, just the ability of this response.
And what is mental brainwashing? What happens there? Brainwashing.
As long as I know, it is a chemical, biochemical blocking of the cells, stem.